This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 21. This is going to be a juicy one. So we are talking about macros versus Whole30 versus intuitive eating, all of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yes, there is even ugly things about intuitive eating and Whole30 too, and I bet you didn't think I was going to say that. But anyways, this is a little bit of a longer episode. I ended up going a lot longer than I thought I was going to because this is chock full of information, but I just wanted to give you guys a couple of updates before we start the episode. So I am going to be releasing a gut health ebook all about intestinal permeability, leaky gut, how to test for those kinds of things, food sensitivity testing, and a bunch of recipes that are going to go along with it. So you can look out for that, I think, in about a week or week and a half after this podcast goes up. Next week, I'm going to be doing a listener questions episode. So send me any and all of your questions about what you would love to know about the past couple of episodes, whether it's metabolic damage, adrenal fatigue, any lingering questions that you had from Christina or Julie or Sean's episode about keto, all of the things, send them to me. And don't forget, if you love the show, I would love you forever if you would write a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, or, you know, just like if this episode really resonates with you or there's someone in your life who you know it would resonate with, please share it with them and help us stop spreading the food and nutrition bullshit that's out there about macros and Whole30 and intuitive eating. All right, guys, so I'm just coming off my second weightlifting competition, so I thought it would be an interesting topic to cover macros versus Whole30 versus intuitive eating. I've been thinking about doing this episode for a while. I don't really know why it took me so long to get it up. Don't really know, but I have a lot of experience in all three of these areas. I have a lot of client experience in all of these areas, and you guys have been asking me a ton of questions about it, so I figured why not do it this week? So in this episode, we're going to be comparing all three of macros versus Whole30 versus intuitive eating. We're going to talk about what are each of them exactly, what are their strengths and their downfalls, and who would most benefit from each one of these, and then who also should avoid them like the plague given their health history and current status in life. So we're going to start from one end of the spectrum, macros, the plan that is the most controlling, I guess, so to all the way to the least controlling and more freedom with intuitive eating. And Whole30 kind of falls somewhere in the middle. So first we're going to do macros, then Whole30, then intuitive eating. So the first two, macros and Whole30, are to be used, in my opinion, as tools. I don't think anyone should do these forever. That's why it's called a Whole30 and not a Whole365, but we'll get to that later. So first up, macros. If you are following a macros type plan. So first of all, when you're doing macros, as people call it, this is short for macronutrients. And I've already done a whole podcast on what are the three macronutrients and why all of them are so essential. So I will definitely link that in the show notes. So macros or a macros plan is different from just counting calories. So with counting calories, you're just trying to hit or I guess go below or get above if you're trying to gain weight, an overall number every day. And it doesn't really matter what the mixture of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates are within that calorie count. Now with macros, you're trying to hit a certain number of grams of each macronutrient per day throughout the day, according to a specific kind of plan that you've either gotten like a template online or you're working with a coach or something like that. So in terms of their composition, most macro plans that I've seen are moderate to high protein, pretty low on the fat, and moderate to high carbohydrates, depending on your size and your activity level, which makes sense from a purely athletic standpoint. If you're a power athlete, like a CrossFitter, a weightlifter, you play basketball, soccer, basically anything but endurance athletes, because you need adequate protein for muscle building and recovery, and carbohydrates are going to be your primary source of fuel if you're not in ketosis or if you're not fat adapted, which most sport and power athletes aren't. And further, fat will slow down the digestion of the other macronutrients, which you need for energy and refueling. So that makes a little bit of sense. So macros works pretty well for people when you aren't attached to your food. For example, one of my CrossFit coaches felt like he wasn't performing as well as his current numbers, so he bumped up his food, he didn't gain any weight, and he felt a lot better, so he just kind of stuck to that. So if you get your macros and you're constantly adjusting them and tweaking them based on how you feel, your hunger levels, how you're performing in the gym, and the results you're seeing, that is a good way to use macros. Now, it becomes a big problem when you get married to your numbers. So first off, if you're doing macros, you should, in my opinion, be working with a coach so that you can get a customized plan. Because even if you use some kind of template, say it's RP or Trifecta Nutrition or something like that, you still need to tweak it to get the numbers right for your body, which is also going to change over time based on how much you slept, your stress levels, what your job is like, your activity levels, your age, like all that kind of stuff, which is constantly in flux. So you're not going to be eating the same exact macros every single day. Now, you should also be tweaking based on how you feel, the results you're seeing, and a pitfall that people find with macros and that I see a lot with clients is then when you just stick with one number or set of numbers forever, that's when you're going to get caught in a rut. And a big part of that is when the person who's actually counting fears that even if they eat a few grams over what they're supposed to eat every day, that they're going to gain weight and then they'll have to really diet it in again starting tomorrow to get quote unquote back on track. Or if they feel like the only way that they're confident in themselves is if they're following the plan 100% to the T all the time. That's when this starts to become disordered and it starts to become a problem. Another important thing to note here is that if you're just a regular person working out, aka you're not training twice or three times a day, you don't actually have to track your macros in order to get better at CrossFit or to get better at weightlifting or whatever it is that you're doing. If you make sure you're eating enough food, you get enough rest, you do enough recovery practices, and you keep training without overtraining, obviously, you're going to get better at your sport no matter what it is. And At the other end of the spectrum, like being super lean can actually impact your performance in a negative way, because if you're not eating enough, you're not going to be able to build as much muscle or have the same performance capacity. Now, in some macros plans, there's like a base phase where you start out with a certain amount of macros every day and you kind of see how that works for like a week or two based on the goals that you have. And then once you get there, there's a cutting phase, which is where a lot of people run into problems. This is where it becomes even more low fat. They start cutting your carbohydrates. This is when you hear people are like freaking starving all the time. They're like obviously cutting a lot of weight because that's why it's called a cutting phase. And then after you finish that cutting phase, you're supposed to go back to a maintenance phase, which a lot of people skip out on. Because as we talked about with the metabolic damage and the starvation mode podcast, if you underfeed your body for a really long time, whether it's, you know, 12 weeks, 6 months, a year, more than that, this is when the metabolic adaptation is going to come in. So when you are cutting, you are purposefully underfeeding your body so that you can lose weight. And when you're cutting in this way, it's usually you're cutting a lot of macronutrients and a lot of calories every day for the purpose of losing body fat and getting leaner or whatever it is. But that's why there is designed in these periodized programs a maintenance phase. So you're supposed to bump up your macros again so that your body doesn't get adapted. The problem is a lot of people who go through these phases don't actually go back to the maintenance phase and they get stuck in a cut. So they're eating like 1,200 calories a day. And then they're like, wait a minute, I can't lose any weight. And my performance is also sucking in the gym and I have no energy and I'm losing my libido and I don't have my period. Oh, I wonder why, because you're super under eating and that's not doing any favors for your body. Okay, rant over. So contrary to what you might think, I'm actually going to talk about why macros can be good for some people now. So some people really like following a macro plan because it can take the decision-making away from them. Now, debatable as to whether that's super healthy or not, but for some people it doesn't work. So in this way, they don't have to worry or stress about how many grams of protein and carbs and fat they have to eat every day because it's already been decided for them, provided that they are either working with a coach or they are willing to tweak it along the way. Now, for high-level athletes, as I kind of mentioned a little bit before, this can also work really well because it does ensure that they're getting enough food in to fuel their training sessions every day, whether it's twice a day or sometimes even three training sessions a day. If you're performing at that high of a level, you almost have to do some kind of tracking to make sure that you're getting all of the fuel and the nutrients you need to replenish your body's stores of what you're losing through exercise and rebuilding for the next training session, whether that's later in the day or the next day. I mean, think about professional athletes, Olympians, all of them have nutritionists that they work with, so they don't even have to really think about the food that they're eating because all of the work is already done for them. So on a less professional level, if you are training two times a day, three times a day, like this is a good thing to look into to make sure that you're not in a catabolic state. You can actually continue to perform at a high level and refuel your body so you're not damaging it in the long run. And for some people, macros can also be good because when they're not tracking, they're actually not eating enough to fuel their activity level. And so in that case, I'd actually recommend tracking for a little while to see where you are and paying attention to how much food you really need to feel fueled throughout the day to maintain your weight or whatever it is your goal. Now, another problem that we can run into here on the other side of things is that people who do track, people who are used to tracking their food, of weighing and measuring and following macros or calories or whatever it is, sometimes these people view their food and their food choices in a like dichotomous relationship. So either they're tracking and they're eating like super clean or whatever it is, and then on a day that they're not tracking, they're just like, I don't care, I'm just gonna eat like an asshole, as one of my coaches calls it, and they're just gonna eat whatever they want. They're totally off plan and they can eat whatever and whenever they want. This is like the cheat day or the cheat weekend mentality. And sometimes one of the reasons that this might happen is because when these people are tracking, they're not actually paying attention to what they're doing or the amount that they're eating and the amount that actually makes them feel good. They're not really listening to their body at all. They're just listening to the numbers. So they're not realizing what amount of protein per meal or overall makes them feel best, how much carbohydrates feel really good, and so they feel refueled after a workout or anything like that. The solution to this is to just be more aware when you actually are tracking and when you're eating so that you know if you go decide to like not count for a day or for a week or when you go on vacation or something, it's not just an excuse to like eat all the things and then feel like crap, right? You can still be more aware of your food choices if you want when you're not tracking. You don't have to go totally off the walls. So another thing that goes in with this is people think sometimes that when they're tracking, they're on a diet, and when they're not tracking, they're off the wagon. And then the not tracking part becomes when they go totally balls to the wall with food. It doesn't have to be this total dichotomous relationship where either you're tracking every single thing and you're eating super clean down to the exact gram of fat, or you go off tracking and you're just eating whatever the hell you want. Another problem that I see with macros plans is for some people, even the maintenance phase can be really way too low fat for some people, especially if you're a very high performer. And this is for females mostly. Males, I don't really see this as much. But this is when your female hormones start to get all messed up, especially if you're doing one of those cutting phases. People will start to lose their libido, they'll lose their hair, they lose their periods. And like that is the first sign that you are doing something wrong, right? If your body is shutting down some of its natural biological functions in order to compensate for what you're eating or over-exercising, that's when you have to scale back and really take a hard look at what you're doing and say, okay, this probably isn't the best thing for my body right now. And Another thing on that same track is some people become extremely, extremely obsessive, and this can be very triggering for some people if you have a history of disordered eating or body dysmorphia or having to have a certain amount of control over your food and trying to use that because you don't have control over other aspects of your life. People become really, really attached to the numbers and attached to the certain list of foods that they're eating because they feel like they're going to lose all sense of control if they have even one day or like one meal when they're not following the plan. And then following this, like, cue the restriction, binge, and guilt cycle. And I've talked about that a lot in previous podcasts, and that is just, it's not a good place to be. And if tracking macros is making you feel like you're caught in that restriction, binge, and then guilt cycle and repeat, and then whenever you go off tracking, you feel like, oh my God, tomorrow I have to get back on the plan and I have to exercise more and I have to only drink green juice and I have to only eat chicken and rice and broccoli and spinach. Like, that is also when you should probably reevaluate what you're doing, because this doesn't seem to be a healthy practice for you right now. So in that same light, a lot of people, in the same way that they get attached to weighing and measuring all of their foods, they also get attached to their weight and how that is exactly connected to the weighing and measuring of their foods. So if their body weight, if they're, say you're weighing yourself every day or every 2 days or whatever it is, and they get freaked out that if their weight even goes up like 0.1 pounds or like half a kilo or something, they're like, oh shit, like I gotta adjust my calories and my macros down the next day to make up for it. Like, okay, take a step back. Did you poop today? Did you drink a lot of water yesterday? Did you have a lot of salt yesterday? Like, did you drink alcohol yesterday? You know, all of these things can play into body weight fluctuations. And even if your goal is whether it's weight gain, like, you're not going to consistently gain some weight every single day. The same way as if your goal is to lose weight, you're not going to consistently lose weight every single day. That's just, it's not a linear pattern. That's not the way it works, because your body is a lot more complicated than that. Speaking of how complicated your body is, in terms of macros and calories and counting, like, your body is doing something different every single day. And your body doesn't need the exact same amount of calories or macronutrients every single day, unless you are literally sitting on the couch and doing nothing all day for like a year. Then your body might burn almost about the exact same amount every single day. But let's be honest, like, that prototype or that person is not the kind of person that is doing this macro plan. So your body's expenditure is going to change every single day based on the factors that we've said already: how much you slept last night, how stressed you are, your activity level, for females, your hormonal cycles throughout the month, whether you're sick, whether you're injured, like what kind of workout you did, you know, all of these things. If you took your dog for an extra walk today, right? Like, and so in that, like, you shouldn't really be following the exact same amount of calories or the exact same amount of macros every single day, because that isn't taking into account for any of the different things that you do as a human every single day. Another problem we run into when people get attached to that number is they might start to ignore their body's signals. So say you get a number from your coach and you're like, okay, I'm going to try this out for a couple of weeks, or you get a new number from your coach and you're like, okay, let's do this. And then you are hungry all of the freaking time. Like, say you finish all of your macros by 6 p.m. and then you're like, oh my God, I'm still hungry and I'm not going to bed until 10 or 11. Like, what am I going to do for the next couple of hours? And then, like, they're starving all the time. They can't stop thinking about food all day. They're planning out exactly when they can eat their next perfectly portioned out meal down to the minute. And, like, sure, you're going to lose weight at first if you're doing that. If you're hungry all the time, you're in a catabolic state, meaning a very big caloric deficit. And if you stay at that level for too long, like we were saying before, your body is just going to adapt to that level of energy that you're taking in, aka slow your metabolism down. You're going to be a lot more tired, your performance is going to start suffering, and all of those lovely things that you don't want that are actually working in the opposite direction of what you wanted to start this macros plan for in the first place. Now, one of the biggest pitfalls of macro plans if you ask me, is the IIFYM movement or the if it fits your macros movement. So this is where people believe that, you know, you just have to eat a certain amount of macros every single day and it doesn't matter the composition of those macros. So basically they're telling you that if you eat, say, 2000 calories worth of broccoli in a day and 2000 calories worth of M&Ms, like those have the same effect on your body. I hope you can hear the sarcasm that is dripping in my voice there. And that is my biggest problem with this movement. So some people will say like that gives you more flexibility within controlling your macros. So say you eat your 3 or 4 meals, whatever, and you've eaten mostly real food and then you have whatever amount of carbs and fat and protein left and you're like, okay, I want to eat like a donut or like some ice cream or Pop-Tarts or whatever it is because you have that amount of macros left as long as it fits into your macros. That's the if it fits your macros thing. And like every once in a while, that is probably fine. But if you start to plan out your days where you're like, okay, I'm going to have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and it's going to be super clean and whatever, and then I'm just going to save dessert every night for having like Pop-Tarts or like ice cream cookie sandwiches or all of this stuff, do you really think that that's healthy in the long term? Because you're just teaching yourself that like as long as you eat 3 square meals and they're super clean throughout the day, like you can just eat shit food for the rest of the day. Like that doesn't really sound like a great idea to me. I don't know about you, but it just doesn't sound like the healthiest thing either mentally, physically, or emotionally. So while some people, it can give them some freedom within their macros if they're doing it every once in a while, for other people, it basically just gives them a reason to further restrict their food within their macros so they can obsessively figure out how to include junk food in your diet. So for example, like if you go through your day and you're eating your meals of like perfectly portioned out egg whites and chicken breast and broccoli, spinach, blueberries, some rice, is it really healthy to finish off the day with some ice cream, pizza, and Pop-Tarts like just because they fit in the rest of your macros? Don't think so. So besides these caveats, who is macros really beneficial for? So athletes, like we've talked about before, if you're trying to make sure that one of your athletes or you are getting enough fuel throughout the day, enough energy in their diet to fuel their very high activity level, or if you're switching into something like ketosis, it might be useful to track macronutrients for a little while to figure out what ratio of fat to protein to carbs work best for you. Now, another thing, since I just talked about my second weightlifting meet, if you're a weightlifter who has to make weight for their meet, this is a good tool to be used in the short term. So I did this in January for my first weightlifting meet. Luckily, I didn't have to cut that much weight at all, but using macros as a tool was a way to make sure that I would actually make weight without having to constantly worry about what I was eating. So the last week before the meet, I was definitely more hungry than I would like to be in the final few days leading up to there, though that might have been less because I was following a macros plan and more because I was so nervous that I couldn't eat, which also happened before this last meet. So I found that after I was finished, I kind of had a sort of rebound effect where there was absolutely no way you could have gotten me to count another thing for at least a few weeks afterwards because I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't want to be forced to count things like in my everyday life. Like, I guess I just rebel against that kind of thing now because I have such a history of like trying to control my food in my past. So on the other hand, it wasn't like your typical restriction binge cycle. It wasn't like, oh my God, I want to eat all of the things that I haven't been allowing myself afterwards. It was more my psyche just being like, you can't tell me what to do. I don't want to count anything. But after that, I just went back to my normal way of eating. It's not like I went into an all-out binge fest or whole 30 day 31 type eat all the things thing that some people experience. So that being said, there are definitely people who fall into a restriction binge type cycle after these meets, whether it's a weightlifting meet and they've had to cut some serious weight, or I feel like this happens more often with some kind of bodybuilding or physique show when these people have been so restricted for so long that following the meet or show, it's like even behind stage when they're done, it's like an eat all the things that I didn't allow myself to eat during their cut for the meet or the show thing. So just like, you know, cue the binge restrict guilt cycle, which then mostly leads to all of these people going back to macro or calorie counting because now they feel so bad about eating their off-plan foods that they were restricting or binging for so long that it's like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know how to eat normally anymore. I don't know how to eat based on what my body really feels like it needs. So I'm just going to go back to counting because this is the only thing I know now. So I also had a really interesting experience after this last meet, so I guess 2 weeks ago at this point. So I only counted macros for like a few days before the meet, and of course, again, I was so nervous that I probably didn't even need to do this because I could barely eat the 2 days leading up to the meet just because of like those nerves. So I came in even lighter than I wanted to be. But this time, in addition to the like, I don't want to count anything afterwards, I was also craving a ton more healthy fats after the meat in my diet, which was like super weird and hadn't really happened to me in a while. Like the day of the meat, I was telling one of my friends that like all I freaking wanted was like an avocado with a side of eggs and bacon and like probably with the Trader Joe's everything bagel seasoning on it because that is the best and like probably cooked in ghee too because at that point I just wanted like all of the healthy fats. So now I was just hungry and that just made me hungrier and sorry if I just made you hungry because that was a really good, God, like maybe I'll have that for lunch later, who knows. Anyways, this is probably a result of most macro plans being so low fat, especially if you're coming from a Whole 30 or paleo type of eating and then you try macros because those two don't really prescribe any specific macronutrient amounts and they definitely encourage you to eat more healthy fat if you're coming from like a standard American diet, low fat type thing, because let's be honest, until the past couple of years, people were still very fat phobic. So back to who this may be good for. If you have someone who has never ever counted their food before, macros can actually be a good tool, again, for a little while, for these people to start understanding the energetic value of food and to bring more awareness to what they're actually eating throughout the day to help them start learning what is in food, reading ingredient labels in the same way that the Whole30 can do that for you. So if you are a health practitioner or a nutritionist, it may actually be a good idea, provided that this is not triggering for them, that you have your clients count their macros for a few days if they've never done it before or if they don't really have any idea how much they're eating right now to get a baseline of where they are, and then you can tweak it for them based on their activity level, their goals, and all that kind of stuff. For example, I'm doing this with a client right now. I don't want her to continue counting her macros or calories, but at this point, I want her to make sure that she's actually eating enough food for her activity level. Because as you know from the earlier podcast that we were talking about metabolic damage and adaptation, if you eat too little for too long, your body will actually become adapted, aka more efficient at burning that level of energy that you're taking in, whether it's 1500 calories, 1200 calories, or whatever. So it becomes nearly impossible to lose weight. And you see this with a lot of people who have stalled weight loss. Your hormones will start to go out of whack. You may have trouble sleeping. Your performance might start to suffer. And at that point, you're probably going to need to increase this client's food gradually to bring back up their metabolic level. But I do have two whole podcasts about that, so I will link them in the show notes. And what's interesting about macros, because it does seem so dichotomous with the other end of the spectrum of intuitive eating that we're going to talk about later in the podcast, it's actually a really good introductory tool to eventually learn how to eat intuitively so that you don't have to count your macros forever. Because if you're counting macros and you're actually aware of what you're eating and how it's making you feel, it can help you start to understand how much food you really need to feel good, what serving sizes look like, and all of that kind of stuff. Now, the last point about macros that I'm going to make is who should avoid macros like the plague, because there are some people that should definitely avoid this, and you can probably guess who this is. So if you are someone who, or if you're a nutrition practitioner and you have a client who has any kind of history of disordered eating, body dysmorphia, an eating disorder, of needing to control their food so that they feel like they have some aspect of control over their life, macros is not the plan for them. Anyone who has a need to control their food because they feel like they're losing control or they don't have control over other aspects of their life, this is giving them the tools to do that, and you're just fueling that trigger, and that is not a good practice for them right now. Because like calorie counting, macros can become extremely obsessive for some people and really triggering to the point where they might start to feel like they don't even know how to eat normally anymore based on what their body actually needs. And they don't know how to stop counting without feeling like they're going to gain a bunch of weight, or they fear gaining a bunch of weight. So they just keep counting out of fear of what will happen when they stop. And this is not a good place to be in. So that's macros 101, as in counting macros. And now we're going to talk a little bit about the Whole30, because since I've already done a couple of podcasts about Whole30, we're just going to do a general overview of this and kind of how it compares to macros and intuitive eating, who it's good for and who it might not be so good for. So the Whole30 is a 30-day nutritional reset on your health, your habits, and your relationship with food, where you're eliminating all processed foods, sugar, alcohol, and other potentially inflammatory foods for the body like gluten, grains, soy, legumes, dairy. And I don't think I'm forgetting anything else there, but I might be. Anyways, so after the 30 days are up, you then reintroduce those foods one at a time to see how your body reacts to them. So then you can develop an eating plan going forward that will make you feel your best. So one thing that is very different from the Whole30 versus macros is that the Whole30 discourages any kind of tracking during the program. So with macros or calories or weighing your food or your own body weight or measurements, you're not actually allowed to do that at all during the Whole30 program. So the good things about the program here are, because you're trying to learn how to be more in touch with your body, you're learning how the foods that you're eating that your body does well with, which ones it doesn't. You're learning how to read ingredient labels, what's in your food, what portion sizes actually keep you full until the next meal. And sometimes if you eat a breakfast and you're hungry an hour later, you're like, oh, I probably should have eaten more in that meal. It's also very illuminating about the habits that you had before your Whole30. So for example, if there's a candy jar at work and you find yourself that you're usually reaching for it multiple times throughout the day, or you have snacks in the afternoon, maybe wine every night, bread or corn chips whenever you go out to a restaurant, you quickly realize the food habits that you've been keeping once you're becoming more aware, and you have to be more aware of what you're eating since there are certain foods that you're not actually allowed to eat on the Whole30. It also helps you learn food freedom, which is coming up with a plan based on the foods that make you feel your best for how you're going to move forward while still trying to achieve any goals that you may have set either before your Whole30 or maybe some going forward. So it's learning how to eat without restrictions and without feeling bad about it, which is a pretty epic place to be in. So now the downsides of the Whole30. Again, if you have any kind of history of disordered eating, an eating disorder, this might not be the best choice for you right now, because some people who are in that place will just try and use the Whole30 as another excuse to control their food and to follow a yes-no list of foods that are supposedly healthy, which all of the foods that are on the Whole30 plan are healthy, but that doesn't mean that following the Whole30 just as a list of yes-no foods is healthy for you, depending on your mental state and your health history. And I will fully admit that this was the reason that I did the Whole30 the first time 5 years ago with my CrossFit gym, because I just wanted a list of foods to follow that I knew would be healthy, that I would hopefully lose weight on. And it's really interesting because at the end of that Whole30, I learned that even while eating all of those foods and I was feeling so good, I didn't actually lose any weight that month. I think I actually gained a little bit of weight. And then I was like, wait a minute. I started this because I wanted to eat better and see how I felt and probably lose some weight. But I ate better for an entire month. I didn't eat any processed foods. I wasn't having any more like stomach cramps or anything like that. I had more energy in the gym. I was sleeping better. I felt generally a lot better. And yet I didn't lose any weight. Like, maybe I should reevaluate whether I even needed to lose some weight in the first place. Now, going back to another group of people for whom the Whole30 might not be the best option right now is if you're coming from standard American diet, eating takeout all the time, like pizza, pasta, fries, burgers, all those things, and you have some health complications going on, it might not be the best idea to jump straight into the Whole30 because you're going to have some pretty extreme detox reactions. And I would recommend you ease your way into it in order to kind of mitigate those reactions. So that's all I have to say about the Whole30 because you guys probably know a lot about it already, and I would rather go straight into intuitive eating so we can compare macros and Whole30 and learn more about intuitive eating since we've never really talked about it on the podcast before. So just like people who are tracking macros who then have off days or stop tracking view that as being like totally off the plan and they eat whatever they want, some people think that intuitive eating means you can just eat whatever the hell you want, whenever the hell you want, or also known as eating like an asshole, as my CrossFit coach would say, all the time, which is just really not true when you get down to it. So intuitive eating at its core is actually a nutrition philosophy where you're making food choices based on your body's natural signals, based on the foods that truly fuel you and that make you feel your best. It's about being connected and understanding how your body feels and reacts when you eat certain foods, both when you're eating them and how you feel afterwards, physically, mentally, and emotionally. So yeah, it sounds like kind of woo-woo, and I'm sure my friend Christina would really like it, but it's true and it works. So you stop seeing foods as good and bad, as yes and no foods, and rather you start seeing foods as foods that make you feel good and food that doesn't necessarily make you feel as good, whether it's in a physical, mental, or emotional way. So eventually, intuitively, most of the foods that you choose will be the ones that make you feel good. And on the other hand, sometimes you're going to choose foods that you know don't make you feel your best physically, but they fulfill you on another level. So maybe that's a mental or emotional level because you're feeling a connection with someone else by sharing this food. So for example, it's maybe you're sharing some wine and birthday cake with your friends on one of their birthdays, or some pizza and pasta while you're on vacation, or your grandmother's apple pie on Thanksgiving, maybe even some Halloween candy. And the bonus thing here is you learn to not feel guilty about that or go into a binge or then feeling like you have to restrict or overexercise to get back on plan the next day, because you understand that those foods can actually be part of a balanced food plan for you as well. Because most of the time you are, again, choosing those foods that make you feel your best. So like, it doesn't really matter if every once in a while you have a food that's off plan, because it'll all balance out in the end. So the good news is everyone has the capacity to eat intuitively. But the problem is, in modern society with social media, magazines, news outlets, we're getting all these conflicting signals and they're sending us the opposite messages that we should basically ignore what our bodies are telling us from the time we are kids all the way through to when we are adults. So think about it this way. If you're looking on social media or in the news or whatever, you want to lose weight, you basically have to suffer through being hungry all the time, which is sometimes what does happen with macros, as we said before. I'm sure you've seen those memes when, like, you finished all your macros by 5 p.m. and you don't know what to do with yourself. So basically, you just force yourself to stop eating because you finished your allotment of macros or calories for the day. Like, what happens if you're hungry again at 7 or 8 p.m.? Or how about that bullshit advice that's like, oh, if you want to lose weight, you have to stop eating after 6 p.m. Like, what? What if you're starving at 10 p.m. and then you're so hungry that you, like, can't fall asleep? That sounds like a horrible idea. And then on the other side of things, there are so many people, especially in the U.S., that, like, don't really know what real hunger feels like, because we are just so programmed to, like, wake up in the morning, have breakfast, then we have lunch at noon, then we have dinner at like 6 or 7 or whenever it is, and we have snacks throughout the day. So unless you've done like some kind of fast or like a cut or something like that, you know, not that I'm recommending that, like most people don't know what true hunger is. Most people know what cravings are. So like, for example, if you're trying to pick a place to go out to dinner with your friends and you're like, oh my God, I'm starving. And they're like, okay, what do you want? What do you feel like eating? You're like, oh, I feel like pizza. But if somebody else says, oh, well, what about tacos? And you're like, no, I don't really feel like tacos. You're not really hungry. You're just craving pizza. true hunger is when like you would eat anything because you are so hungry, right? Like maybe you're craving popcorn or pizza or hamburgers or whatever it is, but like if somebody put a plate of plain chicken and broccoli in front of you, like you would eat it because you are hungry. That is true hunger. Most people eat on their emotions, their cravings, what they feel like eating, what's going to make them feel better, feel happier, feel relieve the sadness. Like most people eat to cover up their emotions, or they drink wine to relax at the end of the day. It's not because they're like craving, their body is craving wine on like a nutrient level, which doesn't really happen. So think about babies and young kids. Before they've been inundated with all these mixed signals with like, you have to finish all the food on your plate and you have to eat all your vegetables before dessert and you get ice cream if you do well on this test, and when you get broken up with, you eat a pint of Ben & Jerry's and drink a bottle of wine because that's just what you do and you'll be fine. These kids and babies eat actually intuitively. They eat when they're hungry, they stop when they're full, and that's it. There's no like aggressive overeating because that's just what they know. When their body is hungry, it tells them, and the babies cry, right? Or the toddlers, if they're in their terrible twos, like they scream at you and they're like, give me food, you know? And then when their body is satisfied, they just stop eating. Unfortunately for us as adults, we've basically unlearned these primal patterns our whole lives because our taste buds and emotions and relationships with food in our bodies have been totally hijacked by all of the different signals that we've been receiving throughout our lives, both through processed foods and through the media. I mean, unless you've been living in a cave your whole life or like on a farm and haven't had any access to social media, but like in that case, I doubt you are listening to this podcast. So a big part of intuitive eating, more going into like what it is now, is mindful eating. So with mindful eating, you are paying attention to your food and the way that that food makes your body feel. So you're eating when you're actually hungry and not just bored or craving something, and you stop when you're full or almost full. Not uncomfortably full, but just like, okay, like, you know, I feel kind of good. I don't really need to eat anymore. And a big part of mindful eating is not eating with distractions. Like, tell me the last time that you ate by yourself in silence and actually thought about the number of times that you chewed your scrambled eggs. And you weren't on your phone, you weren't on your email, you weren't watching TV or a sports game, you weren't reading the newspaper, you weren't reading even a book or journaling or anything. Like, you were just sitting there with your food by yourself. I don't think there are many of you that can tell me that. You know, like it's just, we're hardwired in our culture to be like, oh, you know, even if you're going out to get lunch, just grab it really quick by yourself. Like you take it back to your desk and you eat while you're checking your emails. Or like maybe you take a break from work and then you're on Pinterest or you're reading articles or you're on Instagram or you're doing something else. Like rarely does anyone just take the time to sit down and like be with their food, which sounds really weird because most people just don't do it, right? Like if you if you see someone who is just like sitting alone in a cafe by themselves, like just eating their food, not on their phone or anything, you're like, what are they doing? You know, like it's kind of weird these days. And I think it's weird that we think that that's weird. Like, why is that weird? They're just paying attention to themselves. They're not on their smartphone and like hijacking all of their taste buds, because on the other hand of mindful eating is like mindless eating. I bet you can tell me the last time you were watching TV and had like a giant bag of popcorn or chips or pretzels or ice cream or whatever it was, and you finished the entire container and you're like, shit, where did that go? I barely remember eating that, right? Like that's much more common than mindful eating is. Now, in my opinion, and this might be a little bit controversial, but I think it's really hard to actually get intuitive eating right, or, you know, in order to get to intuitive eating as a goal in a successful way without first doing some kind of program that really allows you to get in touch with how your body feels with certain foods. So for example, if you just go from standard American diet with all of your hijacked taste buds to intuitive eating, you're gonna have a really rough time because all of your body wants is just like straight up sugar, processed foods, McDonald's, and refined carbohydrates. But you probably know at an intuitive level that like those aren't the foods that are best fueling your body if you want to be healthiest from the inside out, right? In that case, you would be choosing nutrient-dense foods, which is not McDonald's French fries. And so the good news is that if you have a history of either doing macros, of some kind of tracking, an elimination diet, or even better, the Whole 30, which I'm sure all of us have if you've listened to this podcast, you probably have some idea of how certain foods affect you, and then you're in a much better place than most people to learn how to eat intuitively because you already have that head start of doing that elimination diet or the Whole 30 or whatever it is. Because if you've never done anything like this before, you really don't know how certain foods affect you, whether in quantities or the quality or whatever the food is. So before we get into like the nitty-gritty of intuitive eating, I do want to make a point that macros and intuitive eating might sound like they're totally opposite ends of the spectrum. In fact, I did say that at the beginning of the podcast. And it kind of might sound like you have to either choose counting and short-term performance with macros versus like health and longevity by doing intuitive eating, but you really don't, especially if you're just like a normal gym-going, daily exercising person. You can actually start to become more intuitive while you're tracking or doing macros or whatever it is, or even the Whole 30 as well, whether you're trying to like transition away from macros or transition away from Whole 30 or anything like that, or if you're not. Like, for example, if it feels like a chore for you to eat 4, 5, or 6 portioned out meals every single day and you're getting sick of it, maybe you just combine your meals so you don't have to eat as often during the day and then you're not as hungry in between those meals. Or like if you're hungry after every single meal that you eat, that's probably a sign that it's time to tweak your macros so that you're eating more food. Or like if you notice that your performance is suffering in the gym, again, it's probably time to tweak your macros so that you're eating more, which most likely won't impact your body composition at all, especially if you're working with a coach to do it, but it will definitely impact your performance and your energy in a positive way. Intuitive eating at its core is about letting go of your total control over food and over every single bite that you eat. You aren't counting anything like with the macros plan, nor once you figure out how certain foods affect you with a program like the Whole 30 or an elimination diet, you're not restricted to a certain list of yes or no foods anymore. Now, this can be a really scary thing for a lot of people at first, and you're going to face a lot of food fears when you start intuitive eating, and that is a really important part of the journey. Like, foods that you never used to let yourself eat because they were foods with no breaks for you, or like you knew that you would binge on them and then you would go into the binge restrict guilt cycle. It's a very big trial and error process to figure out what foods are actually going to make you feel your best, how you can deal with those foods that don't make you feel so great, and everyone's journey is going to be completely different depending on where you're coming from and where you want to go. So it's worth saying that like this whole intuitive eating thing, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a week. It's probably not going to happen in 30 days either. For some people, undoing the patterns that you learned over your lifetime can take years. Going straight from obsessively counting your macros or eating a standard American diet, having disordered eating patterns or whatever your background is, to go to intuitive eating takes time and patience. And I would highly, highly recommend, I cannot recommend this highly enough, that you work with someone like a coach or a nutritionist or whatever it is to do it gradually. Because being objective about this kind of stuff is really hard when you're talking about your own body and your own relationship with food. That shit is hard and you should get some help with it. So, as we said before, a prerequisite to learning how to truly eat intuitively is to do some kind of elimination diet when you are discovering what kinds of foods are going to work best for you. So not coming from the perspective of restriction for the sake of restriction, which a lot of people do, but to become more in sync, not the boy band, but like in sync with your body, to discover what your body's signals are when you are reacting to certain foods. So one recommendation that I would make would be to completely eliminate all processed foods because not just because they're processed foods and because they're not great for you, but because these are the foods that are designed, like actually engineered, to hijack your taste buds and your body's signals to make you want more. Like, how are you supposed to know what your body really truly wants if your taste buds are being told that they just want another bag of Lay's potato chips, but your body is screaming for more vegetables? You're not going to hear that you want the vegetables because the Lay's will win every time. Isn't their slogan something like, "Bet you can't eat just one"? Like, because you actually can't. They are engineered to make you want more. So in that sense, it's really not your fault, because the food just tastes like so damn good, and they are specifically designed to have certain neurochemicals go off in your brain to make you want more. So it's not you, it's the food. And if you've never done anything like this before, it's also helpful to eliminate common food intolerances, like with a program like the Whole30, so that you can see how your body reacts when you introduce them. Be able to see how your body reacts to them on a physical level, not just an emotional or mental, like, "I'm craving these foods" level. Then, once you've done those two things, once you figure out which foods your body doesn't exactly do well with, you can leave those out for the most part of your intuitive eating journey when you're learning how to do this. And it's worth noting also that both for the processed foods, the refined sugars, and all of these other foods that you might not react well to, with intuitive eating, you don't have to avoid them forever. Again, this isn't a list of yes or no foods. Once you truly learn which foods your body is craving, which foods your body is fueled by and feels great with, you can choose to include those foods whenever you want, but you'll probably realize that when you do eat them, you kind of feel like shit, or at least not as good as you would feel when you're choosing nutrient-dense foods that truly fuel your body on a cellular, emotional, and mental level. So they'll naturally weed themselves out and become only a small fraction of your food choices, not because you're being orthorexic or super controlling about your food, but just because it doesn't feel great when you eat those foods, so most of the time you choose not to eat them. So the goal of intuitive eating, like the end-all, be-all goal, this is what we're going for, is to be able to choose foods that make you feel good almost all of the time, and to be aware of how those foods make you feel on those multiple different levels. So again, most of the time, these are going to be the nutrient-dense fruits and veggies, proteins, starchy carbs, and healthy fats, and a balance of those is going to be determined by you and what feels best for your body, depending on your current state of life, stress, activity level, sleep, whatever health history you have going on, and what your current goals are. Maybe you've figured out by doing keto for a while that high fat, lower carb feels really good for you. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to test your blood or test your urine like forever for ketones or count macros forever, because now you intuitively know that eating that way works best for you. So in general, you'll just eat higher fat and lower carbohydrate most of the time. For some people, eating vegetarian feels best. For some people, eating higher carb and moderate fat intake works really well, especially for active people and athletes. But the thing is, like, I can't tell you what's going to work best for you, and neither can anyone else, right? You have to figure that out for yourself with a lot of trial and error, because no one knows your body better than you do. I can't tell you how you're going to react to gluten. I can tell you how I react to gluten, but I can't tell you whether you're going to feel like crap after you eat a piece of chocolate cake or not. Like, that's up to you, and you have to figure that out for yourself and where that's going to fit into your own food plan. So it goes to show that, like, there is a lot of self-experimentation that it takes to get to intuitive eating, and you don't want to get discouraged by that. Like, this intuitive eating thing is a journey. It's something to work towards. It's not like you can just wake up one day and be like, "Okay, I've been counting macros for the past 5 years, and starting now, I'm just going to eat intuitively for the rest of my life." Like, okay, hold your horses, sister. Like, that sounds like a great goal, but that's not really the way that it's going to work for you. Like, it's almost impossible to do this right off the bat, because you have to rewire a lot of the signals that you've been receiving for years. Like, going right from standard American diet to intuitive eating, that's pretty freaking hard, because you've been hardwired the other way. Like, this whole thing is going to be a process, and every day you can do something to get you closer to the freedom of not having to control your food, of having to follow numbers or a yes no foods list, or having food and counting control your life. Like, that's a pretty good place to be. So Just some quick takeaways, because this has been a much longer episode than I thought it was going to be. If you want to start to learn to eat intuitively, here are a couple of quick tips that you can do. So take the stigma away from foods. Change your yes-no foods list for foods that make you feel good versus foods that don't make you feel as great. Try to eat mostly foods that you know make you feel good. And then on the other hand, take the guilt out of the equation. Take the morality and virtue away from food. If you eat a food that's on your no list, you're not going to die. I promise. Okay? You are still going to go to heaven or whatever it is you believe in if you eat a chocolate cake and that's on your no list. Okay? You're going to be fine. So take the guilt out of the equation. Eat with the seasons is a really good way to eat intuitively. When you're choosing foods to eat, think about how you want to feel after you eat the food, not necessarily how you're going to feel when you are eating the food. Because yeah, using the chocolate cake example, chocolate cake tastes pretty freaking good when you're eating it. But at least for me, like 20 minutes later, I feel like shit. So most of the time, I'm not going to choose to eat that. Another thing you can do is don't eat at set meal times. You don't have to eat at exactly the same time every day. Like crazy, I know, but you really don't. Maybe stop using your food scale all the time. Try food journaling to record how you feel before and after meals. And you can do this with apps too. Stop eating with distractions and practice mindful eating. By yourself, notice how each bite tastes, smells, chew your food more, and stop eating when you're satisfied, not when you're stuffed or uncomfortable. And honestly, most importantly, don't be afraid to fail sometimes. Some days you are going to eat until you're more than full. You will doubt yourself. You're going to be confused as to whether certain foods make you feel good or not. This is all okay. And this is a totally normal part of the learning process. And this is why I recommend that you work with someone. And last thing, if you want to learn more or read more about how to eat intuitively, I highly recommend Maddie Moon's podcast or the book Intuitive Eating or the Intuitive Eating Workbook. And I have a whole bunch more resources that I'm going to link in the show notes. And because I kept you guys a lot longer than I thought I was going to, I'm going to end this now. So I hope you guys really enjoyed the episode. Let me know what you think on the blog post for this episode, and I will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.